Welcome to all members of the Committee of Finance and Appropriations, the chairpersons. All chairpersons are here, and I want to welcome the FFC, the FFC delegation led by Prof. Seidler. And Prof, I'll give you opportunity to just make an education who you meet today. And also all who are here today, media is here and budget office, and thank you very much for the present. Just to before we start, we just want to have an indication if there's any apologies that we having secretariat in the case. Yes, you are welcome.
Thank you, Secretary. From the Select Committee on Appropriations, we have three apologies here. An apology from Honorable Motara. Honorable Motara is in the blow of that deck. Other two apologies from Honorable Jayla and Honorable Issa for the trial arrangement. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Chairman. From the Standing Committee on Appropriations, we've got four apologies. First one is from Mr. McLaughlin, who's attending the Standing Committee on Appropriations General. Ms. Lowe is also, and Ms. McLaughlin is attending Earth and Chemical Business. The solicitor is also attending the Appropriations General and Civil Business.
Thank you very much, Honorable Curry. I think today is the opportunity for FFC to express its views on the broadly MPPL proposed allocation and the adjustment budget and deal broadly with the minister's statement. We want to believe that this group will have an opportunity to listen to also other stakeholders. So the submission by FFC will then reach the committee consideration for the MPPL. So we know that Chapter 9 Constitution, the Constitution mandate is to make this useful contribution to considering the MPPL. So, Prof, can I give you opportunity just to introduce your team and then please read us the presentation. I think realize now it's no longer appropriation committee of the two houses only, it's with the finance committee. So we'll appreciate if the first part of the questions can deal with the fiscal framework, just to exhaust matters that relate to fiscal framework, because at 10 we'll excuse members of the finance committee for another session. Elsewhere, we'll remain here as appropriation committee. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. The FEC is here in the absence of a chairperson of the commission, or actually one I'm leading the delegation today. With me is our acting CEO, Mr. Bailey, then down next to him is Ms. Sasha Peters, and then Ms. Antuya try to speak with you today. And but clearly it's serious. So obviously the ability of the minister to stretch out some funds for universities is obviously very welcome. But let's just get to the meat of the report. I would ask Mr. Hamid Amusa to commence with the two models. Ramon, if you would, introductory remarks.
Our perspective is that this has been one of the challenges
But this
which means that we are able to take advantage of the weak minerals. And what that has impacted us is the rising current account deficit. So the right-hand side of the graph here shows that Africa is related to emerging market peers. We should leave on Kenya, we should leave on Turkey. South Africa's current account deficit is among the highest among non-emerging market economies at about 4.3% of GDP, which has a notable impact on our debt financing requirements. Next slide, please. In that respect, when you say your current account deficit, it has a linkage to your debt profile. Already, what you're seeing is that government debt profile exceeds over $2 trillion, round about 5.8% of GDP. And debt servicing costs are the fastest growing expenditure category within government budget. Already, with this projection of about 16% of the GDP, South Africa's debt servicing cost will be almost equal to how much it spends on its public health, for the provision of public health over the next 2 years. So that's quite difficult to understand that particular aspect. So, as Minister Badana talked about, the need to control the rising debt level is also something that has to be looked in the context of what are we spending our money on, and to what extent those rising debt costs can have an impact on government commitment to social welfare and social services programs. When your debt servicing costs are almost equal to your how much you spend on public health, then you begin to have an idea of where we should be worried. So the current debt, because of the slow growth and the uptake in expenditure and the heavy reliance on government stimulating the economy through fiscal policy, we're beginning to notice an upward revision in your debt-to-GDP ratio over time. And when you see the growth debt over the next 2 years, it's projected to be almost half of GDP, which is a rising, is a notable concern. And as the minister has pointed out, the need to ensure that consolidation is balanced with the need to stimulate the economy. Next slide, please. So we move to external, now move to the internal dynamics. The most notable one, obviously, is the role of state-owned enterprises. We would just like to highlight the fact that a number of state-owned enterprises and state-owned companies still remain bogged down by inefficient practices, especially around governance and especially around the operation of their risk balance sheet. And we highlight the fact that government commitment announced 2 years ago in the 2014 budget and re-emphasized in the 2015 budget needs to be activated quite clearly, and we need to see improvement in those particular aspects of how we're going to ensure comprehensive reforms of notable underperforming state-owned enterprises, especially given the role they carry out within the economy and the linkage they have to other sectors within the economy. Next slide. So while state-owned enterprises is particularly important, essentially when you look at the performance of state-owned companies in terms of their debt to equity, their return to assets, their net profit margins, a few of them stand out: Petrol SA, South African Airways, South African Post Office. And this is quite critical when you understand the debt profile of a number of these companies. Unlike government, over 68% of debt held by state-owned enterprises are denominated in foreign currency. Government debt out of non-public sector institutions is denominated in local currency. But for state-owned enterprises, the bulk of their debt are held in foreign exchange. And the need to change when the rand appreciates, or the impact their own underperformance has on their own debt profile is quite significant, and contributes hopefully feedbackly into the deficit financing that the government itself makes. The only thing I'll say is that Dr. Mabuka has touched on this point, that we welcome the risk report table only thing that will come into our point here is that the risk report also needs to contain a section around implementation risks, because implementation risks around how government decides we're going to implement this policy and the extent to which the non-compliance role and implementation of this program can have on the macroeconomic profile of South Africa over the medium term forecast. The key case of this example we have is government commitment to dispose of non-strategic assets, and we're still waiting to see how what this framework that will bring into play and how government seeks to carry out that program of action. I will announce that in the 2016 budget. With that, I have a question.
Welcome the increase in the proportion of resources allocated. So we welcome the amount of business aside as for the 2016 as we believe that it will provide some space to manage those issues that may arise over the period.
Moving on to the as the
is that this is one process that they are implementation and process management business. So the commission carries that. Furthermore, the role of a grant for road maintenance means postponing road maintenance in that particular area. And considering that roads are very, very important for economic development, it is important that roads are maintained timely. The last bullet point is for unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure, which amounts to 1.2 billion. And the department which dominates in unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure are the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, which is approximately 150 million, as well as the Department of Health.
In conclusion, I think the first starting point is defending that, and the main issue there is whether to be downgraded or not downgraded, and what is the meaning of the budget policy statement. Say, what fiscal policy can contribute, and here we're focusing on fiscal policy statement. First issue, anybody is overlooking is the fiscal consolidation that is credible by fiscal
Kenyon.
Consolidation.
Stephen Kenyon.
The reduction over time of the budget deficit that leads to a moderation or reduction in the public debt. And on that score, the Commission has seen promise of gradual fiscal consolidation, and to us it's credible for two reasons. The first being that it resonates with our approach to consolidation, which was a gradual consolidation. In other words, one which doesn't necessarily harm economic prospects from a fiscal policy. It doesn't. So we're seeing gradual consolidation in the medium-term budget policy statement. The second thing to look into that anybody is looking into is what about state-owned enterprises? In particular, what is the statement saying around service delivery and the issue of the liability, contingent liability on the state-owned? And what we are seeing in the MCPS from our analysis you can go to the And then the question, of course, you can ask for it in Indian and conventional framework when the discussion of poverty is in progress. So it's not just a project that you should require that institutional support, but when they appear for it, the higher education alliance is one such example. Anytime when it comes to discussing the actual implementation would be another such big project, and so on and so on. But that will require an institutional support right, to complete your documentation or your document that you use in exercise accountability around long-term fiscal policy issues. In terms of division of revenue issues, the Commission commends the proposals around conditional grants, especially protection of the grants subject to some of the nuances suggesting that we claim that every time we cut the grant, we should do it according to the criteria that we've developed around how to be doing those. The proposed adjustments again are supported. There is nothing that stands in our face in terms of what has been proposed. And we've raised a few measures for the committee to follow up all around the adjustment, but by and large, the commission is supporting the adjustment. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just formally hand over the four reports to the full commission.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
for
you.
For instance, Chair, what is the quantum of jobs that we have acquired from this infrastructure in as far as the state is concerned? I know that we have had progress, we have spent money, but among the gains that we might identify, what would appreciate to know
economic growth stimulation.
It's also possible to monitor this cost-benefit so that we can be able, as the oversight body or as the legislation, to put in the intervention in as far as challenges before we can wait for the measures. My next question, Chair, is on slide 50, on the tax proposal. Specifically, the proposal to raise an additional 28 billion in 2017-18 and 15 billion in 2018-19 financial year. Chair, what are the difference will be made in those financial years in view of the FSC? In which area is this additional tax revenue likely to come from? Maybe you might have an idea of where it can be presented. And Chair, I also want you to know on the same slide that in this move on the revenue side comes as a surprise to you. Or was expected? I think those answers will empower me and will help me in my analysis. Last year on slide 20, on the comment regarding government job creation scheme, what is the FSC's view on the extrajudicial of job creation process, such as the youth wage subsidy and the job fund? Over and above this, I would like to know that if we have started to monitor the short term effects or results of these problems of job creation. Those are my two questions, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable.
Thank you. First, let me welcome the master of the Commission has made, especially when it gave an analysis that this is the most difficult energy peers that we had to see the government's revision of the growth focus. either we will go for a higher ability or we will go for a higher PIC. And if at all we go for PIC, the impact there of course. But the analysis has been made that consumption necessarily is done at the level of your middle income and high income areas, well, which are not in the limited in terms of our society. So society is still limited by the poor, so it will be something triggered wrong if we look at consumption taxes. So I want to recommend that all government spending, you made a comment that budget is between a liberal time at the national level. Well, I know that the type of expenditure things that government is taking currently has made a lot of cuts at the national level. Government might have not made a cut as conditional government and it's not shared to that extent that it can affect the magic pair of energy can be initiated. So it will mean that Parliament may have to have a specific capacity to be able to get main projects that governments are about to take place before the end. So I'm not sure in the current conjunction my elements to distinguish.
The first is, do you as the Assessment Commission
Thank you, Chair. I think we must reiterate what the Minister said in his speech, that we fight corruption with vigour. The Minister also referred to, Honourable Chair, to the green shoots in the economy. I want to hear from the FFC to inform our four committees, how do you see the stimulation of economic growth? What must be done? It didn't come out very clearly in your presentation. To get more revenue, yes, you get it through taxes as well, but you must grow the economy to broaden the tax base. Manufacturing, there must be a demand to manufacture goods to sell. If the demand is low, the manufacturing will be low. So could the FFC make that submission to us? Thank you, Chair.
Yes,
thank you.
I'm disappointed in how. That's a minor issue. I'm just disappointed in your members that's not here. I also have commitments at my home.
So, we're going to take 5 minutes, and then we'll soon tell
you. Sorry, man, your 5,000, right? 4,000. I want like Harim. Harim must not go.
Hey, now.
No,
he's
going
to attack, but no, he's going to attack your meeting.
No, no, no.
He doesn't attack meeting.
You know, finance for me, people like listening to themselves.
Yo.
They really enjoy listening to themselves.
Did you hear that response?
Yo.
Honestly, you know, today I gave chance to listen to
the all over.
No, really. It's like, you know, they like to send themselves established rules. And they are not.
They know they are not.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to do that way. Yes, I do.
But there's no meeting most. All of them left.
They are coming. Okay. They should be there.
We don't need quorum in this meeting.
No, we don't need quorum.
Or even if we had the two chairs, we can proceed.
Otherwise, we don't want public entities to underperform because we'll chop and change the flies there. I'm having all the time. Thanks, honorable members. Like Chairperson Karim, I've got all the time until 6. So if all of you are ready, we can stay together here with FFC.
With university is closed, I can spend the day here.
So Prof is available, so we'll stay together, Prof, here. Yeah. I think for purpose, we've started, we had this presentation of the FFC. Of course, because of time constraints, our other colleagues has had to leave prior to full engagement, because I think this process of engagement helped enrich even our report and also to adequately deal with issues that are raised. So we can proceed with the discussions on issues that are raised. One of the issues that you raise is the transfer and subsidies is one of the spending items showing real growth of 1.7. I just want to check with you what are the main drivers, major drivers, and who are the major beneficiaries within the transfer of subsidies. Just issues that we're going to discuss now. And the issue, you have not responded to the issue, but you are still going to respond in writing around the issue of the NDP targets. It relates to the fiscal framework. To what extent that the proposed adjustment budget really steers us towards the NDP targets. To what extent really does this proposed adjustment steers us to the NDP targets? Well, notably, you did raise issues around global and domestic issues, factors, which we agree. But I'm just trying to stimulate members as well to come back to the discussion so that we, if there are issues that form part of division of revenue earlier that were raised, you're welcome to can respond to take us through some of the specific questions. Honorable Tuavaza, you wanted to say something earlier?
Yeah, be on record.
The distributional report that you referred to, and you were specific in saying that such report could be requested when there are big projects and education, post-school education funding being one of those big projects. Could you perhaps identify a few other such big projects from which such a report could be requested. The second issue, Chairperson, is with regard to revenue through tax. I see that the issue of lost taxes through illicit flows is not coming out. Even the PPO Chairperson didn't make mention of it. I was wondering whether the FFC could have a look at that issue and perhaps and suggest what steps could urgently be taken to begin to arrest that situation, because the amount of money that the fiscus loses through these illicit flows is really huge, and it could make a difference in terms of just fiscal consolidation. Thank you.
Thanks. Honorable Senukwa Nyane.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The first thing that I would have liked to raise, I think one of my colleagues earlier raised the issue of the over-reliance or heavy reliance on government for the economy. She actually addressed it, but I just want to add my voice to say that, you know, in South Africa there's lots of money, but the private sector is not coming on board. And I think that is one of our biggest challenges, because the private sector is only, well, I mustn't say all of them, but many of them are only interested in benefiting, but they are not prepared to come on board and also support the economy of the country, because I think they could make a big difference if they participate. And the issue of SOEs, I see it's a bleak picture that is being painted here. I saw that you said the most of them have deteriorated. And the number of areas that the inefficiencies that you pointed out really give one a serious worry as to where they are taking us to. But somewhere, I think in your conclusion, you also said that you support the measures. What are the measures that are in place? And because these are also very key SOEs that are mentioned here, that you would expect that they would really make a contribution to this country. The issue of conditional grants for local government, the local government conditional grants are such an important element of the budget. And I see that the reductions, for obvious reasons which we all know, because there are reductions everywhere. But in terms of reduction because of non-performance, what are the causes, possible causes of this non-performance? Because I'm just trying to imagine that sometimes it's just underperformance, but it must have a reason, like maybe they don't have the capacity. Because it's not just underperformance or underspending, is it? Because there are no people to. Because I know we do have some HR challenges in some areas. So if you can share with us in terms of this. And then with education, you mentioned the issue of the quintile classification. It's one of my pet subjects, this one, because when you go out there to the communities, this quintile thing is really a big challenge. These norms and standards of education that, you know, they look, you know, when you go to townships, you find that there's the old township, there are these new bonded houses, which are called the new houses in townships. In many instances, when schools are built there, they are allocated a classified higher, simply because they are in that area. But the reality out there is that it's not necessarily the children that live there who attend those schools. Many of them go to Model C schools and all that because the parents can afford. But these schools are mainly attended by kids from surrounding areas, some from informal settlements. I've got a few in my mind that I know. The children from the old townships and other surrounding areas will come to these schools, and then they are treated like, you know, they can afford when they really cannot afford to pay fees. Maybe the other thing would be, do I have another thing here? Okay, the post-school education, education and training issue, a huge challenge, I think, for all of us. And I'm glad that, you know, you've mentioned that it's not just about the money, but the policy needs to be tackled, because we can find ourselves thinking that we must just put in money there and we don't look at the other factors. Because I think when, as we did with things, for me the most important thing is that we need to look at transformation issues, we need to look at equity issues, because we could have the money but still promote inequality in access to education. So this is just by way of commenting that, you know, we've got, whoever is dealing with this particular area, they've got huge challenges. Unfortunately, it's so urgent that we get answers, but it is a big challenge. Thank you very much.
Thanks. I think let me give FFC the opportunity to just respond to the questions that has been raised, or areas of clarity. Thanks, Prof.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, I think one must also be very clear that in our view, this the report, being very supportive of it, so again, the suggestions doesn't in any sense compromise our own independence. This, as we wrote, was a statement by the Minister under very difficult circumstances. We couldn't think of other ways in which this could have been done better. So, and that's why we actually, on the whole, are in supportive of it. Let me then ask our team members here to deal with specific aspects. I'll start with Dr. Mbuchu, and then we'll ask them to deal with their areas that they've dealt with.
Yes, if I can just start with the question from the first set of questions, we'll detail much more in the written response, but when it comes to assessing the job creation aspect of infrastructure spend, we've already tabled recommendations on how one can assess the job creation aspects of infrastructure spend. That was in 2012, and we developed a checklist for Parliament to use in tracking the different infrastructure spend, but we will give more details in terms of that checklist that we already developed and tabled as part of our recommendations for the 2012 input. The too heavy reliance on government, I think, was one of the other broader questions. And this observation is quite correct. How does one see it in terms of financial flows? Because that's the acid test. And perhaps this is one of the green shoots. The private sector, as a group, has actually parked surplus balances in the financial system. So there is a lot of surplus from private sector, but in the banking or financial system. So at a very superficial level, how do we unlock that? Well, at a superficial level, you are already beginning to unlock that. When you have higher than anticipated budget deficits, those have to be financed. You look for money, and most of the money is going to, the financing for the higher budget deficit is going to come from the debt that you issue. And that is going to be financed by that money that's sitting in the financial system. And the good thing about it is, although we now are targeting higher budget deficits than at February, the way this is going to be financed is unlikely to be unsustainable, simply because there's a lot of that money packed in the financial space. And when government issues debt, it's not going to have appreciable impact on interest rates, et cetera, or all the other things that make such financing unsustainable, at least in the short term, because that money is sitting in the financial system. So at a very superficial level, this is the subtle thing that has happened with the new higher budget deficits. When I say higher, I mean relative to February, that in terms of financing those from the financial system, there shouldn't be any major problem in terms of raising interest rates or anything like that, because there are these private sector balances sitting in there. So it turns out that, after all, it is paradoxically a good thing that they had not spent those balances, and those balances were sitting elsewhere. And now we can use them almost as if they are public money, i.e. through the government borrowing. But the longer-term answer to that question is, of course, we also need to go into the head of an investor, a private sector person. When you park, a private sector person is there to make money in the first place. And what affects them is confidence. And when they have some idea about any uncertainty around, they're not going to go into long-term investment. So what policy needs to do is to relentlessly be addressing any uncertainties that we see. We don't want to open a new kind of debate, but when you look on our land markets, for example, there's a lot of uncertainty that's sitting in the way of somebody unlocking their money and doing long-term investments in agriculture, because they may be apprehensive about the direction in which restitutions would be going. Are they going to go back to the 18th century, et cetera, et cetera? The same in the mining sector, where you would expect a lot of that money to go in. So again, those immediate things that government can do in addressing those areas of uncertainty could easily unlock the balances that we are seeing here. So yes, the private sector is not coming to the market, but also yes, there are reasons why they are not coming onto the table. And yes, government can address at least some of the big ones that talk to uncertainties around certain policy pronouncements that ourselves as Parliament here can make the executive to account in terms of how or what steps it's taking to remove those uncertainties. And here, mind you, I'm not saying which way the policy should be, but any clear pronouncement on what exactly the position is brings certainty. And then you can be able to say whether those balances or the private sector not coming into the party is not a result of uncertainty. So the first hurdle, we can't climb over that hurdle of the uncertainty. Then the next big question that was posed was whether the FSC has its own model, and do we regard the focus by National Treasury as credible? Yes, the FFC runs and maintains its own models. We have a suite of models. We have what are called computable general equilibrium models, and we have econometric models that we use in our case. We can issue not just focus, but also projections. And in terms of our assessment of the national treasury focus, they are in the realm of possibility with our model. Any model is going to differ from the next model because it's dependent on the assumptions that you fit in and the researchers that are built into that. In our particular case, for example, when they come to 0.5, ours would be throwing out a figure of 0.35. But that's acceptable a range of difference, and it shows that it's to do with the specific things that have been fed into that particular model. So we have no reason from running our models to doubt the credibility of the new revised figure, and we fully understand what is driving that figure towards a halving of economic growth rate to where it is right now. Then the second part of the question was on the 2% economic growth rate and the slide that we showed of our, of the actual economic growth rate coming down and way below 2%. And what I just wanted to clarify there was that the 2% growth rate is what economists term potential growth rate. It's not speaking to actual growth rate. So although actual growth rates may appear to be far away from 2%, that is not a potential growth rate. The potential growth rate is if you were to think of yourself on a plane, and your plane rises until it reaches cruising speed. That cruising speed is what's called potential growth rate, when it's in a steady state or just maintaining itself. And so for South Africa, if you were to think of South Africa as a plane, what is that growth rate that will sustain it in the long term, the potential growth rate? And that's the 2%. And that you'd expect to differ from the actual growth rate that we workshopped today. Finally, there was a question around debt levels. And that question is really about what is an optimal level of debt. What should be the optimal level of debt? We haven't had that discussion yet. There are ways of deciding on what is an optimal level of debt, but we have to agree on the precepts or what underlies that to, you know, there are SADC guidelines on what the debt level should be, there are IMF guidelines on what that should be, there are European Union guidelines on what that ought to be. But drawing that discussion back to medium-term budget policy statement, it's not talking about what the optimal level of debt should be. That's not the issue we are discussing. What the medium-term budget policy statement, in our understanding, is about is to say we have seen a doubling of debt levels since the global economic crisis. Can we stabilize that cost? Irrespective of whether it's at optimal, below optimal, above optimal level, can we stabilize where we are so that we open up that discussion in terms of exactly where should it be? And that's where we are saying the consolidation proposal that is being proposed is supported by the Commission, in that it says let's stabilize the trajectory that we have seen, i.e. doubling of public debt levels. Stabilize that, then open the more deeper discussion around what is the optimal level of a public debt when your finances are more stable. Hamed, then the other guys.
Thank you, Ramos. I'll confine myself to two issues raised by honorable members. I think the first one was around how does South Africa compare relative to its emerging market peers in terms of its GDP per capita growth rates. And the question was specific to BRICS. What we observe about BRICS is that South Africa and India, relative to Brazil, Russia and China, have the lowest per capita GDPs. On average, over the past 10 years, South Africa's per capita GDP in dollar terms has hovered around between 4,500 to about 5,300 in US dollar terms. The lowest to South Africa is India, at just about around 1,600 or 1,700. However, when you contrast that, that's the GDP per capita average. What is more important is the growth rate of that per capita GDP. Over the past year, India and China have recorded per capita growth rates in their per capita income of more than 6%. The only countries that have performed worse than South Africa are Brazil and Russia, simply because of their own internal dynamics when they have gone into essentially gone into recession. But what we're saying there is that when you group countries together outside of BRICS, and you look at countries in Asia like Philippines, Thailand, and other countries in South America like Chile, Argentina, and Colombia, who are also commodity-based in many respects, South Africa's GDP per capita growth is underperforming those particular countries and is declining, and is a declining trend, as we have observed. So those are the figures that we have in that respect. So you can't compare South Africa's GDP per capita growth to China and India's at about 6.4%, and South Africa has actually reached a negative for this particular MTF cycle. The second issue I'll confine myself to is what the honorable member has raised around state-owned enterprises. The question was, do we find a contradiction in the sense that we are supporting reforms and that SOEs are not performing very well? If you look at the slides, what we specifically said and we welcomed was the fact that government has instituted an aggressive campaign of ensuring that SOEs are back on track, simply because it recognizes the poor performance of state-owned enterprises over the past 10 years. In 2007-2008, SOEs, the contingent liabilities or guarantees to SOEs, we are about 8% of GDP at around 177 billion rand. Right now, in 2015-16, the guarantees to state-owned enterprises has almost doubled at more than 500 billion, accounting for 14% of GDP. So efforts to ensure that these increased guarantees over time do not become a normal feature of the fiscus are what we welcome, and that is improving the efficiency of the state-owned enterprises, the governance practices of the state-owned enterprises, and ensuring that they're able to move into profitability. As you have noticed in the past 6 months, the Minister of Finance and National Treasury have instituted a number of measures, as you saw with South African Airways, to bring these companies back to profitability, which includes submitting cogent sustainable transformation plans to return to profitability, turnaround strategies that they can be benchmarked against over the long term, and ensuring that they are regularly assessed to ensure whether these firms are coming back to profitability. So in that respect, the measures that have been put in place to address the operational deficiencies of these state-owned enterprises are what we welcome. These reforms are meant to bring about a long-term impact, and therefore the deterioration we have seen over the past 10 years are hopefully going to be addressed with these measures that are meant to transform these state-owned enterprises back to aspects of profitability and their long-term sustainability. Thank you all.
Are we done? Okay.
Okay, Prof. Now let me just raise this question. Even if we can improve in terms of efficiencies, but not address, I think, what the the minister raised prominently that the structural reform of South Africa's economy, building competitive edge. I just want to have your comment, FFC comment. Does South Africa has to take a major leap with regard to industrialization, building new industries, and compared to its peers, what would we say regarding sacrifices between labor, business, and the state role with regarding to maintaining or driving economic growth of the country?
Chairman, that's obviously a tough question. It's no much equivalent, but let me give it to our economist, the chief economist here, Ramos, if you can do within 5 minutes max, see if you got any clear views on it.
Yes, this is, it reminds me of somebody who said, once you start thinking of economic growth, you can never think of anything else. Because it's such a tough one. But Honorable Mohai, in terms of your question, I honestly do think that the economic development the growth challenge has changed quite a lot, say in the last 20 years. Essentially, growth comes from four areas: consumption, investment, role of government, and the external sector. So if we think of it as those four components that drive growth or development, government is but one aspect of it, one quarter at best of what can reasonably drive economic growth. So that means government really needs to be tactical in terms of how it addresses economic growth. It can't do everything. As we are saying already, and members are raising this, that there's already overcompensation. Government is overstretched right now. And perhaps next year we'll even come to say the overstretching is in fact one of the biggest problems now undermining the green shoots of economic growth. So when we start thinking of government trying industrialization, a government-led industrial strategy, there are a lot of pitfalls in history on where a lot of things could go wrong. So my feeling would be, unless if government intervention in that industrialization space is highly surgical and focused and serving an incubation role to enable the other three components of economic growth to really express themselves, then yes, government does have a role in the industrial space. But if it's government is the mode of delivery for the industrial strategy, then we need to, in fact, revisit even the National Development Plan, because the National Development Plan is saying to 2030, let's build a capable state, which says even in provision of public services, its argument is we don't have a capable enough state to be dealing with what it is tasked to do. So if we now extend the mandate to include non-public services, into industrialization, even before we've gotten the basics, we could easily run into a lot of those major problems. So yes, government has a role to play, but that role needs to be confined on the understanding that it is but one of the other four components that eventually drive economic growth. And when we look at South Africa, particularly in run-up to the global crisis, what was it that was driving our economic growth that we've lost? It turns out that it's consumption, private consumption. That's what we've lost in terms of the old drivers. Is it such a bad thing that we've lost that handle? Maybe not so much, because this was being fueled by rising household debt. And that's what, some of the growth was probably superficial in that it was debt fueled. And we've almost gotten to a stage where we've lost that as the driver for growth. So while we're growing around at levels of 5% or 5.4% as in the NDP, that was premised on debt fueled type growth. Now we've lost that. So is the potential growth rate around 2% that we're seeing in the MTPPs? Maybe that's beginning to resonate, in that without debt fueled growth, in other words, not such a big contribution from C, the consumption, but most of the growth coming from I, the investment, and the external sector. Where does the actual number lie? Probably 2.5% thereabout. So that would be an off-the-cuff type response. What role should government be playing? Should we leap into industrialization? I would be highly cautious before leaping into those. And in fact, from a parliament perspective, say, let's get the capable state. This is what we know from NDP. Let's get the capable state that delivers public services sorted out. And then we can begin discussion around other things outside of capable state for public services, because we still haven't sorted out the basics. So let's sort out the basics, and then the other niceties we deal with thereafter. There were a few other division of revenue questions that were raised, which, if you want, we can also respond to.
Yes. You're welcome.
Yes, there's two questions that I will respond to. The first one was with respect to job creation schemes. And the honourable member asked, what is the FFC's view with respect to the youth wage subsidy as well as the jobs fund? Now, previously the FFC made comments concerning these two programs. We welcome government's efforts to try and target spending on investment. I think with respect to creating jobs and stimulating economic growth, that is the right approach to take. However, what we did was previously we cautioned that with respect to the youth wage subsidy, the jobs created should be new jobs created and not jobs that would have been created in the absence of the subsidy. Then there was a question, or rather a comment with regards to the quintile classification. The Commission agrees with the Honourable Member's assessment, and in last year's submission on the Division of Revenue, we actually made the submission and also a range of recommendations around equitable sharing of schools for better outcomes, where we actually assessed the issue of quintile schools and the issue of funding with respect to equitable outcomes in the sector. So I would refer the Honourable Member to that particular chapter where we have much more detailed explanation around the issues that you've raised.
I'm going to respond to a question on the reduction in grants, as well as a question on some of the reasons for why some grants are underperforming raised by the honourable member. The issue, first of all, let me clarify, we are saying that the reductions are on specific grants, not reductions from one municipality giving another municipality. We have to clarify, the target is individual grants. And the bottom line, we are saying that all the reduction, if you think of a reduction or an underperforming grant, that amounts to a wastage of resources. There is some inefficiencies. So target those particular grants where there is some wastage and some inefficiencies. That's the basic principle which is guiding our submission on the reduction in grants. And we are saying, besides that, there must be a historical evaluation of the performance of grants before a decision is taken to reduce those particular grants. You have to evaluate what are the reasons for the underperformance of some of the grants, because we don't want to disadvantage the poor in the reduction process, but we need to find out what are the reasons for this, and then after finding out the reasons, then you can make a decisions and also deal with those particular reasons for the underperformance. For example, some of the reasons for underperformance include the capacity issue, which was raised, and we have continuously raised the issue of capacity in municipalities. It is capacity to translate some of their expectations into reality, which is lacking. It is also capacity to monitor the performance of some of the grants. And also, we see that one reason is that priorities change during the implementation processes. Municipalities may change their, they may reprioritize, which slackens the implementation of some of the grants, and also the poor capacity to plan. And lastly, I think some 2 years ago, the FSC looked at the issue of accountability, that within municipalities, accountability mechanisms are very weak, and hence some of the grants can be allowed to underperform continuously. So those are some of the reasons for underperforming. As we are saying, deal with those grants, it's cutting of these grants, look at the historical performance of the of each particular grant individually, then come up to a decision on the basis of that. Thank you.
I'll respond to three questions, two in relation to tax revenue, and the first one was whether we find the trends in tax revenue surprising, and in short, we would say not really, particularly if we consider the strong correlation between tax revenue performance and economic growth performance. The second question was whether where tax revenue is likely to come from. So over and above your usual suspect like personal income tax. Government has also been talking about implementing a carbon tax as well as a sugar tax. So those are possible avenues where additional revenue can come from. Then Honourable Gwabaza also asked which are some of the big projects where a distributional report would be useful, and we think apart from the higher education issue, it's with respect to the NHI and also the nuclear bold program.
Does it? No, thank you very much, FFC. I see Treasury is still with us here, Stephen. No, we don't want you to say anything now. We want you to follow the submissions of other stakeholders. And today, fortunately, is our Chapter 9 mandated by the Constitution to advise on fiscal framework. Now, I think members are. I'm going to hand over to the chairperson, and to first raise her comment or observation, and then to close the meeting for us. So, Chair, I hand over to you. Chairperson for thanks.
Thank you so much for the engagement. It does help in terms of deepening our insight on the medium-term budget and also your proposals that you think would strengthen and also reignite the economy, because we all agree that it has been introduced during a difficult economic environment. And the emphasis here is reignition of the economic growth so that we can then improve in a lot of, you know, appropriation of money, budget and increase, and then appropriations to both your national departments, your provincial departments and your local department. My question is, I think I'm asking because I'm very new in this committee, but I promise you, you are assisting us big time, you know, to catch up and also to be in a position to be on top of the situation. If you could elaborate on the distributional report, what I would like to know is whether you have a framework or you would want to propose a framework, because I see it as a tool that we can best also use in our oversight function. So if you could just elaborate on the distributional report for us. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Chair. I think what we can do is, with the written responses, we'll also submit a framework to commence discussions with yourself around what that distributional report can contain. Yeah, but we have some very specific ideas around that distributional report. And also, without overcommitting the Commission, we will be in a position to capacitate your researchers in terms of the implementation of that framework. It will involve a lot of other sidewalk spreadsheet assessment that we can capacitate your researchers with doing prior to your assessment of the government table distributional report.
All right, in closing, let me thank all of you for coming, but also for your input, your quality input. Can rest assured that with your meaningful and constructive engagement, I think this committee has achieved on its objective this morning. Not this committee alone. Remember, it's four committees we have achieved on our objective. Well, we welcome the input by the FFC, which has really poked our minds as we reflect on the 2016 MTBPS. It is clear that there is a broader agreement that the 2016 MTBPS did well in sustaining fiscal consolidation as a mechanism for reigniting economic growth, stabilizing budget deficit and debt levels. We are confident that this will stand us in a good stead in December during the review by credit rating agencies. Talks to that, and I promise everybody has been, but at least we feel a little bit relieved, we feel relieved, and ours will be to make sure that indeed we maintain the good work or take it to greater heights so that we avoid being downgraded. It is also comforting that the continued fiscal consolidation will not negatively impact on the provision of social protection. We agree with the Commission that for expenditure smoothing, and I like this term, I don't actually like to say, wow, expenditure smoothing, I'm hearing of it for the first time, it's nice. And you can rest assured we'll be using this term now, as long as you know where it comes from. We're saying we agree with the Commission that for expenditure smoothing to occur, departments should spend at least 50% of the overall budget end of September, should have spent end of September, because we are now in November. Am I right, Prof? However, when you break this down per department, you will observe some discrepancies of under or over expenditure. So we are saying we would like to see departments confining themselves within the 50% expenditure benchmark to ensure quality service delivery and to reignite inclusive economic growth. We welcome the proposed SOE reforms, such as governance framework, to standardize and improve the position of the SOEs. We strongly believe that this will go a long way to improve economic growth and investor confidence. Because that's what we need to trigger, creating a conducive environment. And I want to believe that that was the vision of the of government when it came up with these the concept of the state-owned enterprises, so that they can assist in this regard. But for now, we see it as a liability, but I'm sure, because as we engage with them, we insist on a turnaround strategy that will ensure that they achieve on their vision of assisting with economic growth, not of being a burden to government. For now, we see them being a liability, but these engagements at both levels should make sure that they indeed they trigger a response that will take us, our economy, to a greater height. Okay, if the turnaround strategies are unable to stabilize SOEs with government guarantees, this obviously poses a very, very high risk of becoming a burden to the fiscus. Can you imagine? And we don't want, this is a situation that we don't want to see. I hope they get this message clear. On the issue of conditional grants, yes, the historical performance of a grant should be taken into account before reduction is done. But we also need to thoroughly examine the underlying reasons for such underperformance. We also take note of the proposal of the conditional grant reforms on social programs. See, we're coming up with that proposal, and yes, I think it's something to be looked at. Its feasibility should be looked at, and then we see how we can assist in leveraging more budgets, because you see, we need more budget for education. Let me reveal my secret. And I'm not just saying it for the sake of saying it. I mean, the Constitution binds us. It orders us to respond to the needs of the people. Now, from what you see outside, it's called it's a social need. We've seen a need. You can say everything that you want to say, but it is a need. So ours as government, we're expected to respond to that need. Well, indeed, the provincial road maintenance is of paramount importance. We agree with FFC that the project management weaknesses should be addressed, because there can be project management weaknesses. On the issue of higher education, I think we all welcome the increase in the post-education funding to address the current challenges. But we would like the FFC to advise this committee as to where can we get more funds to achieve free education for the poor and the middle class sector. Where? You can assist us there. We really would like to depend on your expertise there, because we are looking, but we don't just to overreact or to be overreactionary. We want to be properly advised, so that when we take a decision, it must be from an informed position. So if you can look at that, I don't know if that will be asking for too much, but I can rest assured, we really want you to assist you. assist us with this one. All right. The committee will have further deliberations on the input of the FFC before reporting to the House for adoption. And indeed, I'm told you are this very important stakeholder. I wonder if we should be meeting on a 6-monthly basis, or you think we should reduce that to quarterly. Will it be too much? Quarterly, remember, we want to assist, which means we would also have to change the way we've been doing things, because if we are where we are and we've been there, there's something that we're not doing right. But maybe increasing, or will it be a costly exercise, our engagement? Remember, the NDP talks about innovation. I'm trying to be innovative here, but if it's if it doesn't work, it's okay. But I'm looking at this good work and how you are impacting on our work, because we also have got to have to make an impact. Because to me, it will not be good enough. We always come and spend money, but if you look at the outcome, there is no impact. So I'm trying to look at the best way in which we could make an impact. Let's think about it, and then we will take it from here. Thank you so much, and thank you so much, honorable members, for your quality inputs and your quality engagements and your meaningful and constructive engagement. The meeting stands adjourned. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you very much.
No, you can't do this.